Hi, I'm Daphna.
And I'm Mark Wade, Editor-in-Chief of Boom Studios, and we are picking up second part of a conversation that Daphna and I began last week.
That kind of meandered, but I think you'll really enjoy where it goes.
Listen up.
Well, I think you might also be ahead of the medium because there is still that hard disconnect between holding a comic in your hand and typing in what you're looking for.
And going to look for it, exactly.
I mean, we saw it with... And Alan Moore actually did this. I don't know if he did this consciously, but it was very interesting to see the fandom afterwards with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and Top Ten, the annotated websites where you had... I would read it with the screen open on one end and flip through page and just...
The different thing. I mean, this is... And I can hear 45-year-old comic fans across the nation screaming bloody murder, and I want to shut them down. There is the act of writing a comic that is impenetrable to casual readers, and so you have to go to the internet. That's one thing, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a deliberate act of, I am writing something that can sort of stand on its own, but at the same time, the value add is the fun of it. The value add of being able to, like when I read Black Dossier, I didn't read Black Dossier in a vacuum. I deliberately, I had the documentation in front of me because I knew that was going to be part of the fun of the experience.
That's why I'm looking forward to Longbox. That's why I'm looking forward to the digital. I mean, on one hand, I understand not the necessary the death of the medium, but there is the 22-page structure that's going to become less and less important.
Awesome. Great. Good. Because it's such an artificially imposed...
Though you must admit, it's a great editing mechanism.
It is. Yes, but at the same time, it's just that's the single most difficult part of my job as a writer. It is not coming up with the ideas. It is not finding a dialogue. It is not creating the characters. It is fitting it all flawlessly into a 22-page structure that never varies. It's like writing
haiku. Page turns.
Exactly. I mean, I honestly spend more time in any script. I spend more time pacing it out and trying to finagle it as I go on the fly, you know, from here and here and move this balloon here and move this panel here and make sure we get this page turn and stuff. I spend more time doing that than I do the actual creative part of it. Which is ridiculous. It's gotten to that point.
See, and I don't know if it comes out of not necessarily reading a lot of unnamed bad scripts, but people who aren't, I think there's a snap or crispness to people who can edit themselves into a 22-page structure.
I think,
I will miss when the medium gets redefined and hasn't solidified yet.
Exactly. And suddenly people can write as much as they want.
The discrete unit, I think, is something that is the one sacrifice of the internet that I question.
That's interesting. That's a good point. You're right, because it does at the very least, it keeps you from running off at the mouth, or it forces you to, if I've got 15 pages of story, I either have to find more story, or I have to dig deeper into what I've got, or what have you, but I can't just end early, I can't end late. This is interesting. That's a good point, that it is a self-editing mechanism that I'm not going to run on and on. Tangential to that, but on point, I was looking at a motion comic the other day, and it was very much a straight adaptation of a printed comic. And so much a straight adaptation that there was way too much dialogue. There were captions that would have been necessary in a static medium that are no longer necessary in a moving medium. There's dialogue that's necessary in a static medium that's no longer necessary in a moving medium. But it's all there because they wanted to be really faithful. And this is the self-editing you're talking about. This is the form that it takes, whatever the medium, should sort of dictate content to some degree. You have to take that into account. This made more sense when I brought it up.
No, but I mean, I think you're right in the sense that the act of fitting it into a form...
Mm-hmm.
takes the ego out of it.
To do it well does. I mean, so many people don't do it well. That's just it.
But it's a process. I mean, the definition of, let's be honest, well is a subjective term.
True.
It's, I don't know, I almost feel like recognizing the need to do that is the first step.
Oh, absolutely. Here, Denny O'Neill, who was, you know, an editor and writer and been in comics for like 5 decades, he has a great quote, which is he talks about how comics, and certainly being able to write for comics, or certainly understanding the way the medium works, it's a foreign language like any other foreign language. The people who are going to be best at it are the people who learned it when they were young and learned it at a formative stage. And I can tell you right now that anybody who comes in this office with a script who started reading comics when they were in college doesn't quite understand the basics of the medium and the basics of what you can and can't do on a page as the people who are reading comics as a very young kid. It's just not, that's not a flaw, it's not a condemnation, it's just that's the way the medium works. It is a foreign language. And the earlier you learn it, the more adept you're going to be with it. All right, so then to bring it back to my original question, which you'll remember from last week, faithful listeners, is at what point is it okay to be anonymous on the internet? At what point is that defensible to be anonymous on the internet? And at what point do you have to sort of stand up and take responsibility for what you say? And I like your answer, which is, if I read you right, which is that that's the wrong question. That really the question is, with each passing generation and our familiarity with this new way of interacting with people via the internet, how much expectation are we going to have that we have the right to be angry about stuff, that we have that it's not just noise, that it's not, you know, how much expectation of anonymity are we going to have?
It's expectation. Why do you make me say that word?
It's right here.
I can't do it.
Do it. It's right here.
Anonymity.
There you go.
Yes. That's going to mean completely nothing to have the internet. But it's that expectation of the right to your own identity.
Right.
And the right of others to your own identity. And I think, I mean, it's back to that woman who, she was asked for her name and her address, and she put it.
And therefore, then when she is sued to give her name up, because she blogged, I mean, about somebody,
you don't have to. No one. Yeah. It's this adhering to rules that no longer have any meaning,
right,
or don't have any power behind them.
Right.
So we are still. I mean, it still boggles. I think it encapsulates for me just that transitional phase of we still are working in an old way of thinking.
Right. As much as I want everybody on the internet to be able to stand up and give their real name and stuff, the reality is that's not going to change. And like you said, it's only going to get more and more anonymous with each passing generation. So I can either continue to, you know, to rage against the darkness, or I can light the candle and go, all right, you know what? It's not going to change. So my expectations have to change. My expectations on what I deem socially acceptable are going to have to change. You understand why that's a very difficult
concept for me to grab onto. It's this idea of the internet as a private space that I think is like, and we've been seeing it in discussions lately. Yeah. It's like you say something and you don't know who's reading.
Right.
And so we have to start operating under this assumption that everyone is reading.
Right. You're right. Exactly. Instead of being more careful about our, I think the trend is, rather than being more careful about our words because we realize that everybody else is reading or anybody could be reading, I think that instead the pendulum is swinging towards trying to force the notion that, you know what, everybody's going to be reading. So if everybody understood that, then no one would really have to be terribly careful.
Uptight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uptight about their words. Okay.
Well, and there is that safety valve of being able to create new personas. I think it's a very valuable tool that might be threatening to some because the world is no longer homogeneous as they once thought it was.
Right.
Well, I think it shifts our value system a little. I think it shifts our values of which voices are important to listen to.
Well, it's like I said, it's, God, the disconnect between my intellectual analysis of this and my emotional analysis of this is just as far apart as you can imagine.
But I think that's exactly what's going to happen is this understanding that there is going to be the disconnect.
And, yeah, and I have
that
to,
some
I,
random flamer on the internet is going to emotionally hurt us, right, but rationally we know it's just some random person on the internet. Idea.
I know. But a more concrete example and a more less personal example is, again, that notion of I grant that it's easy for me to say, hey, listen, if you've got a problem with this company or that company, or if you feel like you've been mistreated by this place or that place, you should be able to say so, and you should be able to say so and give your, but if you're going to say so, give your name. It's easy for me to say because I have a certain station in the industry now where I pretty much burned all the bridges I can possibly burn at this point, and those that are still standing are the ones that are
rebel with nothing to lose.
Exactly. And those that are still standing are the ones that are apparently made out of metal and will never burn. So it's easy for me to say that, but I'm also not like 3 years at the mast, and I've just now started this business, and I have a fledgling writing career, and I'm terrified of blowing the whistle on the guy who didn't pay me because I'm afraid the next guy who I work with is going to remember me as the whistleblower. I understand that these are reasons for anonymity. They just I'm having a difficult time. I freely admit, like I said, it's easy for me to say that, but everything I've just said in the last 45 seconds has come completely out of my head and not even remotely from my heart. Because my heart is saying, own up.
Ah. Well, I also think this idea of strong opinions comes from, again, an era where we don't have access to all the information.
Right.
So we can build these strong opinions without all these caveats and sort of secondary explanations. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm not expressing my.
I'm curious. I mean, are you saying that our opinions are becoming more vociferous and more strong because we don't have to actually back them up with fact, because anybody can go look up the facts?
I think it's both. I mean, I can't say one or the other, but I think I see almost two paths available to us, mm-hmm. in the sense that the internet is big, anyone could be reading, but my internet differs from your internet.
Right.
In the sense that the sites I go to every day feel to me solidly, this is the internet. And so it's very easy, it's an echo chamber. You say an opinion, people agree with you, because you only surf the parts of the internet that you agree with.
Right.
So it creates strong opinions that might not necessarily be open to new voices.
Ah, good point, exactly.
At the same time, we now have access to these voices. We don't have to pay for it.
Right.
I don't have to buy a magazine I disagree with to hear what they're saying. I could find it online. There's no barrier financially. There's no barrier regionally. There's no barrier now between me and the access to someone who disagrees with me.
No, and more to the point, you don't even have to go to the library to look up your facts anymore. You don't have to. This is what I find baffling, though, and this is an interesting dichotomy, is that you would think then that the nature of national discourse would be leveling out and would be becoming less angry and vociferous, because unlike previous generations where I formed my opinions based on the facts at hand, which were limited because that's the way facts were, now I can base my opinions on an unlimited number of facts, and you would think that that my opinions would become more mediated, and in point of fact
they get stronger.
They seem to get stronger. The national healthcare debate is the best, most prime example of this moment. I cannot remember, because I didn't live through the civil rights era, but I cannot remember the last time I've seen the nation so vociferously divided, angrily divided to a civil war level on something that the noise just drowns out the facts at this point, because everybody's yelling, everybody's screaming. I'm yelling, I'm screaming. And you would think, again, all the facts are there. If you look, I know facts is also a subjective term, but all the information is out there. And if I'm making sense, I guess what I'm trying to say is I no longer am limited by the one daily newspaper I get and my Time magazine and how often I go to the library. I'm no longer limited to that in terms of how I build my information pool and my facts and my opinions off of that. Now I got everything to pull from. You would think I'd be smarter about it. You'd think we'd all be smarter about it, but instead we're just angrier. Why is this?
Because I think angry is easy. That's true. I say it as someone who is in the same predicament, where I think because we have this multitude of choice and this availability, we need to simplify our lives. Mm-hmm. We have our own responsibilities to our own happiness.
Right.
And so, you know, it's back to that rational, emotional disconnect of we live our lives one way.
Right.
Which is hopefully rationally.
Hopefully.
And we have our interior lives running on a completely different operating system.
Yes.
And it's such a new medium that watching the Iran election, watching the national healthcare debate, it's just fascinating to see this discourse change because, you know, and especially with Iran, we suddenly got a voice that we did not hear in the news. We did not see the people on the street who we had been putting under this umbrella of this one scary, quote-unquote, country.
Right.
They were one person, a block, and now we saw that it's a multitude of voices, and I think it changed. I think it's shaded our way of approaching the world. These are singular people who we now have to acknowledge exist as individuals.
Right. Somebody saw District 9 this weekend.
So. I did. It was awesome.
Just
It was a very good movie.
It was awesome. I hate to change subject, but it was awesome. Also, we're also running out of 15 minutes. But I think we made some good points. I think you've opened my eyes a little bit. Thank you. Perhaps I have done the same for you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we can all hug and share afterwards. So and sing Kumbaya around the campfire.
I don't know how to sing Kumbaya.
I don't. And then
I just like saying these little things and watching Mark wince.
I know. It's just amazing. You're smart, and yet you're
so slow.
Yeah. No. It's just that the gaps in your cultural knowledge are just so unpredictable and vast. It's amazing.
I went to summer camp in Israel.
You know when you run defrag program on your computer and you see and they're sorting out the blocks and stuff, and that's what your mind looks like to me. It's like, this is the part of her that knows about Star Trek, but this is the giant part of her that has no idea about 1980s television. It's just amazing. So anyway, that said, let's wrap up for now. We will be back next week. I'm Mark Wade.
I'm Daphna.
And we will see you next week.
Good night, or morning, or I'm going to stop talking.
Read Incredibles. Oh, yeah, it's about comics. Read Boom.
Unknown. Bye.